However, they have been replaced by groups of aid givers, who are always called, in case of disaster, accident, or some other unforeseen calamity. There must not exist any occupation in the area of the production of weapons or anything harmful or violent on the planet Logo. Etta interrupted this conversation and imparted to all that a concert of harmonious music was being prepared in the next building, and that for John, something like this might be a pleasant new experience, possibly proving to be more effective than long explanations. All went along through the park neighboring the building, which from far away resembled an earthly Greek temple. The unusual building was a classical construction with wide steps and round columns with many carved trimmings in the recesses and down the sides. When they entered, John noticed the rich interior decoration, the pictures, which created a relaxed atmosphere, the statues which were full of harmony, and finally the beautifully worked mineral stones. These stones, according to the words of Av, radiated vibrations into space, which supported the creativity as well as the calming sense. As you see, Avu continued with his account, art on Logo has as its task spiritual rousing, and also reinforcing. Art, especially painting, depicts things, which are not physically visible for us but may be seen only in spiritual or mystical vision. This also means that the majority of artists on Logo are also spiritual masters. These examples of their art show that which is beyond the physical world and so help people better comprehend the spiritual world. Many of the pictures, as you can see, depict people surrounded by the colors of their auras, or energy. For example, this picture belongs to the group of paintings of joy, whose aim is encouragement on the path of wisdom, which leads to the eternal light. Looking at such a picture should fulfill the highest lotus, the spiritual center in our body, with spiritual light. Etta added to Avu's narration by drawing John's attention to the next row of paintings hanging there. These are pictures which show how it turns out when a person does not respect the universal spiritual laws of wisdom, and so, in effect, knowingly walks towards the disintegration of harmony, which, in the end, will have negative impact. These pictures show what happens when spiritual development is stopped or laws of harmony and wisdom ignored. The picture here shows how the preoccupation only with matter will lead to a loss of intuition. This picture depicts the fall from spiritual and ethical to material consciousness. The more the consciousness and its thoughts are directed toward the physical body, instead of toward the soul, the less development is made. Some of the pictures displayed here try to show this happening. At this point they went through the corridor and entered the hall, which had an interesting interior. Everything was sort of softly curved, along with columns and various ornaments, which were oval-shaped. The seats were wide and comfortable, and the whole hall was brought into a harmony of white, blue, and gold. Over the place where the stage was, the ceiling was again like a vaulted dome. And from this dome there were semicircular vaults leading throughout the whole hall. Oda explained to John that this shape affects an acoustically clear and carried sound. The hall was, for the most part, full but the tall and slender people just kept coming. John's friends sat down on the blue armchairs, Avu sat next to John who sat next to Etta, who leaned towards him and said, "Spoken plays are also put on here. These plays are so spiritually and ethically written that their words and meanings help to cleanse the aura and elevate the consciousness of those who listen. The spoken plays are mostly based on three themes, spirituality, character, and goodness. During these plays, which are followed intensely, we become connected with the contents and thus strongly reinforce the qualities spoken about in the play. Today, however, there will be a music concert with a vocal performance. Maybe there will be something similar to the sounds of planet Earth." The hall was already quite crowded. John waited with interest for the musicians to come and begin playing. He observed with admiration that the listeners were not chatting with one another, but rather sitting quietly, some of them with their eyes closed. It struck John as surprising, and he looked to Avu for an answer. Avu answered him telepathically that the element of listening to tones is an inner experience for the people of planet Logo. The music is not only perceived by hearing, Avu explained telepathically, but mainly by the inner experience of the soul. This means our music is harmonically composed so that listening to the beauty and harmony of the tones affects the hearing, even more importantly. It is the inner perception of tones which helps the subtle energy rise through the spiritual centers of the body to a higher level of consciousness. This leads to the fact that during the concert, the majority of listeners experience an inner spiritual blessedness and joy, which are spiritually reinforcing. That is also the reason people get quiet before a concert and concentrate, in order to accelerate the process of connecting with the beauty of the tones, which will sound and be so harmonically written that they will enable the soul to rise to a higher level of consciousness. Safa finished his explanation just in time because the concert was just about to begin. Three musicians came on stage, bringing large instruments with them. One looked like a harp, the second like a flute, and the third was a big stringed instrument. First the harp began to play, and John realized why this instrument was so interestingly constructed. Above and below there were sounding boards, which modified the sound of the strings. This meant that the tone which actually played on the string reverberated from more than one side, so that the sound was actually not only stereophonic, but sort of multiplied, as though there were more than one harp playing at once. The next interesting thing was that the strings could play whole harmonies at once, so that while playing more strings one after the other, it sounded as if a little orchestra was playing. The more John listened to the music of the tones, which sounded unbelievably soft and harmonically captivating, the more he felt his consciousness actually being uplifted. The flute joined in after a while, sounding here like the tones of heaven. The melodies were harmonically penetrating, and John experienced his consciousness shifting into a state of joy. The next stringed instrument, in the shape of a big cello, which sounded as soft as a violin, brought strong vibrations through long trembling tones. John unconsciously merged with the music, which lifted him even higher into the spheres of calm, peace, and joyful fulfillment. He felt a sort of gentle light go through his whole body, rising to the back of his head. He felt the tones of the music somehow lifting him up from his seat, and his consciousness rose to dizzying heights from which the heavenly music of the spheres comes. Now a tone of clear and shining sound like the scent of a sea wind was added to the melody, which vibrated through the hall. John opened his eyes and saw a girl in a long pink pleated dress with dark black hair, who completed the harmony of the musician's tones with her voice, and added a further spell to the harmony. Her singing was of the incredible beauty of sung tones, which mostly moved in the harmonic cadences of the color Athura, which afterward changed into the singing of one long tone, embellished by the magical beauty of her voice. The length of the tone lasted unbelievably long, filling the hall with a lovely vibration of sound colored by the music of the instruments, as though the tone were floating up to a higher sphere. John was fascinated and his consciousness got lost in the spheres of the universe, where it lived through an incredible blessedness. The tones of the instruments and the voice filled the beautiful hall, which was filled by the vibrations of the joy of those present. There was neither a place nor a human soul in this hall, which was not lit up by, and filled with a harmony, which rose to the spiritual sphere, where they felt the presence of the everlasting and universal Godhead. It was the spiritual path of the music that led them to the awareness of how they might remain for some time in this joyful, but strengthening, state. When the concert finished, and the artists stayed for a while with the listeners in absolute silence, John was the only one who lifted his hands to clap. Avu gave him a signal, however, to stay still. When the silence was interrupted by bowing and exiting of the artists, Avu explained to John that the highest reward for an artist on planet Logo is to have created such a spiritual atmosphere that most souls are lifted to a higher sphere. The expansion of spiritual consciousness for the listeners was the greatest reward which an artist could receive, and that is why they stood for a few moments in silence, in order to feel the vibrations of the joy filling the whole hall. When they had left the building, the sun was still lighting the soft atmosphere of the planet Logo. They took the path around the little lake with light blue water, around which myrtle green grasses grew, and from which a rainbow of colored flowers sprang. The air was charged with soft energy, which came from the auras of nature, spreading all over the planet. John was still filled with the energy from the concert of music and singing, and now nature's energy made him even stronger. He felt this joyful strength inside, along with the fulfillment of spiritual everlasting life. John's new friends, Etta and Ode, bade goodbye to him and Avu. Avu stayed alone with John. "I see," said Avu, "that our day on planet Logo is approaching an end, and that it will be necessary to take care of your arrival back to your body, which rests on planet Earth. Perhaps it would be better if we went back to the Temple of Cosmic Wisdom, which, as you know, is surrounded by a park where there is very strong energy. Before the trip, you will receive as many vibrations as possible in meditation, and then we will set off immediately on the return trip through space to the planet Earth." When Avu finished talking, they floated and flew in the direction of the Temple of Cosmic Wisdom. They landed on the ground and sat on a bench in front of some ample trees, whose leaves shone with the bright colors of their auras, which somehow lit up the silence of the night. After some time, they both stood up and their astral body began slowly to move away from the surface of the planet Logo, until only a weak trembling blinking in the distance of space was proof of their having set off on the return trip to the planet Earth. Night was descending on Logo, only the moon near the planet and thousands of stars were visible. Everything was wrapped in calm, disturbed only by the joyful energy of this beautiful blue-pink planet. 6. Chapter 6, Return to Planet Earth. As John was lying in his bed where he had been for many hours, his body began to show signs of life. John very slowly opened his eyes and calmly surveyed his room. Then he closed his eyes again, and after a while, reopened them to reassure himself that what he was seeing was actually reality. He slowly began to move his hands, and after a bit he was able to sit up. From his bed he had a view of the forest and sky, and he was assured that he was really back where he was supposed to be, at home, on the right planet. The sun was already throwing its rays all around, and John guessed the time to be 9 o'clock a.m. However, he still did not want to get up and begin his morning exercises. He sat comfortably on the bed and began to clearly remember everything he had experienced during his long sleep. In his mind's eye he saw pictures of space, and then of Logo, a bluish-pink planet, with its beautiful gardens and temples, unusual houses, and the gentle people. Through all of this was a thread connected to the spiritual leader Avu, who gave it a seal of reality and true appearance. The more John thought about it, the more real the personality and existence of Avu became. And not only that, but, more importantly, he had the sensation of having a celestial friendship which did not know the hampering effects of time and which was everlastingly present. The pictures from the planet Logo floated before his inner eye like a fantastic film from a Hollywood studio, although for John these pictures were living realities. He slowly got up and dressed. Suddenly, he heard a knock on the door. He opened it and there stood Jean and Maureen, who invited him to have breakfast with them. After a short stroll through the woods, they arrived at their little house, where breakfast was already waiting on the table. This day, instead of a walk through the woods on Woolman Hill, John had determined to go to the town of Deerfield to look at the shops and be among people. And because he was very unfamiliar with the town, he invited Jean and Maureen to go with him and have a lunch. Deerfield was a typical quiet Massachusetts town with many small lively shops, as well as a supermarket within easy reach. John parked his car downtown and all three walked along the streets of Deerfield, where John received an explanation of almost everything he saw, as if he were a tourist. There was even a Chinese restaurant, and because all three were vegetarians, Chinese food full of vegetables and rice was exactly what they all wanted to order. On the way back to the parking lot, John bought a newspaper and Time magazine in order to catch up on what was happening in the world, which he had neglected while living a secluded life. John assured himself in his conversation with Jean and Maureen that their interests and opinions concerning religion were very similar to his own. And when, in the late afternoon, all three were sitting at a table with a pot of steaming tea, John followed Jean's comments regarding the use of the I Ching, the Chinese book about harmony. Outside the sun was already setting and the first stars were beginning to shine in the sky. John took his leave from Jean and Maureen, thanked them for breakfast and the afternoon tea, and began slowly to make his way back to his cottage. He stopped on the extensive grounds to be able to watch last of the sunset, the coming of the night, and the distant sound of the bleating sheep, which had returned from the pasture to the large sheep pen. John slowly returned by way of the forest path to his cottage. Here he sat in the quiet and looked out the window at the coming dark of night, returning in his mind to his visit to the planet Logo and sorting through all of last night's experiences. Afterward, he wrote long into the night about his outer space experiences. The next morning John read through the newspaper in the Time magazine he had bought and realized that, from all of this news of the world, all political events changed regularly, depending on who had the most weapons or was economically strongest. The economic competition between nations was an unending fight in the new markets of the world, all about more profit and the increase of standards of living for certain sections of the population. By comparison, other countries had to worry that a large portion of their citizens, predominantly children, might die of hunger or become part of the waves of immigrants, which spill from one country to the next. This problem was a vicious cycle for not only statesmen, but, more importantly, for individuals who suffered their fates within an almost indifferent world. Systems of dictatorship destroyed the soul of human creation at its roots in the various professions of society, or led human thought in a certain direction. Political events changed their form according to the needs of the participants or those who were behind the veil of the political incognito. However, they ruled with boundless power behind the scenes of history, political players in a chess match, those who got power through the fateful coincidences of history. Religious belief was an accessory to certain ideological groups, rather than a genuine spiritual effort on a personal path towards God. Religious dogma was sometimes similar to political dogma. Even though in this century, there was more religious tolerance than, perhaps, at any time before, a universal understanding of the reality of one God was still absent. Peoples of different religious faiths gave God various names and attributes, based on the needs of their society and character of their thinking. Not until the religious words and their manifestations quieted down were the believers of various denominations able to perceive the presence of one God in a deep, quiet, collective meditation. In this contemplation, from a lay point of view on the world's situation, it occurred to John that many large changes awaited a world built on the planet Earth before it could go along a path similar to the one which had been chosen by the society on the planet Logo. This development would have to be aimed at accessing a higher level of perception and creating a society based on new higher ethical values, free of the egotistical approaches of groups and nations. John understood that a greater solidarity and unity of the whole planet would have to be the basic guiding force on the way to changing the mindsets of people, and that a certain world universalism would have to replace the splintering or conflicts of interest. John imagined a system which would work on the principle of the universal unity of the planet Earth. This system would be put into practice in economics, politics, religions, healthcare, and other spheres, and would allow the rapid development for the future of the planet. In this system of universal planetary unity, John did not see any wiping out of nationalities, religions, or languages, because he considered them characteristics unique to each nation. However, he did see in the universal planetary unity the unlimited, and more importantly, unselfish, cooperation of all nations, which would stop the fighting and wars that still unnecessarily guided the world. John also began to realize the great importance of forming a worldwide ethical parliament, similar to the UN. It would fulfill the human, ethical, and spiritual values, which were currently left to the governmental bodies of the world. The imbalance between the spiritual and worldly approaches throughout history had resulted in one-sided focus in the world's development. For that reason, spiritual ethics had to become lasting parts of the governmental structures. It became evident to John that the idea of a system of universal unity and cooperation was quite viable not only as a concept, but also as a practical step in understanding the present or near future. It is constantly necessary to create new systems in definite segments of time, to encourage the development of those who live in that time. John formulated his thoughts for universal unity in a number of points. Soon he had developed 7 points of universal unity on paper, which were for him something like a direction for the improvement of his own perspective on, and approach to, present world events. The 7 points of universal unity contained the following: 1. Unity among people, because all people had the same creator, the same source of life, they should see the unity of all people on this planet. 2. Unity and understanding in families. To have harmony in a family means to live in friendship and understanding with all the family members. 3. Unity among the nations, while realizing the unity of all of humankind, we should try to live in friendship with all the people on planet Earth, no matter to which nationality or race they belong. 4. Unity with nature and all its creatures, people should try seeing themselves as stewards of the natural world, and not as superior rulers who disturb the harmonic course and cause suffering to nature's creatures. 5. Unity and cooperation with all the believers of different religions. Every religion has the same aim, to lead its believers to a knowledge of God's presence in their own hearts and souls. 6. Unity of all life forms. This should lead to the realization that there is only one source of life in the universe, which is a great gift and is the basis of all creatures and people. 7. Unity between the soul and God. When the daily practice of silence and meditation brings those into direct contact with God or the Absolute, and the understanding of God's existence. After writing the 7 points down, John realized that his view of the world and his own values had changed, and that if he wanted to be a creative part of this world, he would have to try to fulfill and practice these realizations. The sun had reached the highest point in the sky, and John was both joyous and mentally exhausted. He decided that it was the right time to have a rest and relax. He was encouraged by his empty rumbling stomach, which was clearly asking John to descend from the spirit sphere of daily life and to take care of his body, which was now begging for a good lunch. When, in the evening, John returned from his afternoon walk, he sat down and started to relax. He slowly drifted into meditation, without realizing that a pleasant surprise was waiting for him. The more he experienced the silence in his mind, the faster his soul was uplifted to higher spheres, in which he felt a pleasant vibration of calm. After some time, John saw a bright light through his inner eye. Eventually, he recognized the presence of the spiritual master Evu from planet Logo in the light. John was filled with great joy because Evu, although he was physically absent, had become a friend who represented an unbelievable change in John's life. This same joy was felt from the vibrations of Evu, who immediately began telepathically to send his message to John. "I am glad to see you again in this sphere," said Evu. "I believe that the trip to Logo made a great impression on you, and that you have reached a new awareness." John could only agree with the words of Evu, when he continued, "Based on the request of the rest of the spiritual masters from Logo, I would like to ask if you would like to experience another trip to planet Logo, in order to understand its life better?" John was full of surprise, as well as joy, because he had not expected anything quite like this. But, on the other hand, he felt a human fear of such a long trip far away from his home planet, which was a basic part of his life. Evu saw the joy and hesitation in the vibration of John's aura and said, "I know you're a bit worried about this trip, but there is nothing to worry about because it will be as safe as the first one. Do not forget that your soul is immortal and that nothing can happen to it." After these comforting words, John agreed to a second visit of the planet Logo. After that, Evu's vibrations dispersed. John slowly came out of the meditation, and he immediately and clearly remembered the new encounter with Evu. However, the last words of Evu assured him that there was nothing to be afraid of. John took the message Evu had brought as a great gift for which he had to be grateful, as it not only enabled him to examine life on a civilized planet but also to become a part of it for a short time. He also realized that his human understanding would not allow him to take in everything, as he would have liked, but still his presence on Logo could be a great experience, which would certainly lead to the expansion of his consciousness. It was already late in the evening when he fell into a deep sleep, so that he could prepare everything for tomorrow's long trip through space. The moon was throwing its quiet silver rays over the wooded Woolman Hill. The voices of birds could be heard in the crowns of the trees, birds who had yet to put their heads under the safety of their wings, and in the dusk the bleating of sheep from their warm shelter was also heard. A peace had unfolded over the entire landscape, where there was still a place undisturbed by civilization, and where night could become what it should be, that is, a period of rest and relaxation. 7. Chapter 7, The Second Visit to the Planet Logo. John tried to sleep for as long as he could so that his body would be the most rested and as full of energy as it could be. For that reason, he was in no hurry to get up. His breakfast consisted of substantial whole grain flakes, covered in milk. After breakfast, John set off for a walk in the woods in order to prepare mentally for his evening meeting. In the afternoon he left a message with Jean that he did not want to be disturbed the next morning. In the evening he read a few paragraphs from the Gospel of St. John and then on meditation from the Bhagavad Gita. John lay down on the bed, relaxed his body, began to concentrate, and slowly, he entered a state of deep meditation, where Eva was waiting for him. They flew together through the cosmos, and Eva pointed out some planets with various life forms as they passed them. There were space stations orbiting around some planets. On others, the beginnings of life appeared through the slow movement of the life-giving plasma which traveled through the planet. Now, even more than on the first flight, John realized how full of life the depths of the universe were. The whole enormous cosmic colossus would have no reason for its existence if it were not filled with life. After a while, the bluish-pink glow of the planet logo came into view, and both dove into the light atmosphere. As before, they landed at the Temple of Cosmic Wisdom. John's soul felt fine, having returned to a place it already knew and to surroundings so pleasant. Eva wanted to lose no time and so, immediately, began the next tour of the planet logo, and as last time, took on the role of guide. We shall now fly to see the buildings of education and science, where people receive their intellectual knowledge, and which are located all over the planet, Eva communicated to John's soul. With that, they took wing again over what was already familiar ground to John, strewn with low houses and shining vibrating countryside. After a short while, they drew near to a park in which stood some large buildings, whose white paint was set off by sunny rays of the new day. Both landed at the entrance to the park, where students or scientists dressed in long light clothing were already walking down the green periwinkle lanes, going from one building to the other. Every building had curved walls and a wide entrance with steps and stately white columns. Some portions of the building were round. This shape created peace, a relaxing and meditative kind of energy. In some places, the roofs of the buildings were prism-shaped, like pyramids, which created energy of concentration and will. Eva led John to a building that was bigger than the others, with a long flight of steps and rich columns through which a number of doors could be seen. After entering the building, Eva made for a round niche in the hall, where an illuminated board was hanging. He touched the board, and there appeared an image of the face of a black-haired young woman whom Eva addressed by the name of Munyu, announcing his arrival to her. After a short while, when John had had a good look around the large hall, which had harmonic pillars and a beautiful decorative balcony placed in the center, Munyu appeared on the staircase in the hall. She had a tall and slender figure, and her elongated face with its black hair reminded one of a drawing of an earthly Egyptian goddess. Her robe was pink with gold fringe and flowed to the ground. When she came before Eva, both bowed to one another. Then Munyu turned and bowed to John, who followed suit. Eva communicated telepathically to John that Munyu is the leader of the whole of the centers of intellectual education and wisdom. John compared the center to a university on Earth. Munyu led them up the wide stairs to the next floor where there was a big hall with white tables, on each of which there was a screen. People of various ages sat at some of the tables, intent on what was being shown on the screens. One can call up a text, Munyu explained, to read or study. If the desired text is not stored in the memory of this library, then the student can connect with the Continental Library, which contains the texts of every disc, where information about the whole planet is gathered, so students can read any text they need to. Furthermore, a student may take any text appearing on his screen and save it on his own disk, and then call it up on a screen here in the library or at home.